Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
When I look at the Warrior team, that yeah, we've been through all these permutations. Jonathan Kuminga, stop messing with his head. Let him start. Dennis Schroeder's going to solidify the two spot. Trace Jackson Davis was having some sophomore woes. Now he's playing better. What do we do with Draymond? We can go through all of this throughout the roster and what they need to do to get better, what they need to fix. But sometimes I just, when the game's over, it's just like you're just not very good. There's just not, there's nobody on that bench or on that roster, whether you're starting or sixth, seventh, or eighth, or ninth man, that's as good as what it is that Cleveland or Phoenix or Memphis or OKC or Dallas, what they're putting out there. And that to me is really, I mean, we get to hit our head against the wall of like, why are they losing? What's going on? How do they get back to 12-3? And the answer may be as simply as they're just not that good.
And I don't think that would be a wrong statement to make, because you look at how they played last night. They got played off the court. It was like they were the old man playing pickup, and they can't play full court anymore, right? Like, oh, they're gassed, they're breathing, they can't make shots, their legs are tired. And not to say that's the exact reason as to why they played so poorly last night, but you know, it just looks like as if the NBA, in a way, has kind of passed them by. These teams are 3 or 4 or 5 deep. They have youth. They're 26 or 27. The Cavs have Garland. They have Mitchell. They have Allie. They have all these young horses that can play 48 minutes a night and run up and down the court against a 37-year-old point guard and a bunch of guys that are trying to find things out and figure things out still. Like, you're going to look slow against those teams. You're going to look like you're lost against those teams, but the unfortunate part is that's a lot of the NBA now, and you have to find a way with the roster you currently have, and maybe they can. Maybe, like you said, Dan, they're just not that good. And against the Mavs and against the Knicks and against the 76ers and against the Grizzlies and the Heat, whoever else you want to put up there, like the Bucks, like maybe when it comes down to it, you're just not that good. Against OKC, who is seemingly 12 guys deep every single year the past couple seasons, like, it's going to be hard to hang with those guys. And when shots don't fall, it's going to look 10 times worse. And in the last, I don't know, 13 games, shots haven't fallen at all. And when you're streaky like that, it can look really good at times, how it did to begin the year. But when Jonathan Kuminga is, I don't know, like when he's your number two and Curry isn't hitting very well and you hit 23% from three last night, like, you're not going to win games like that, which unfortunately is how they've had to win games almost all year, and they haven't won many in their last recent weeks or so.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey sports station, always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch, and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union for a low-rate auto loan. Apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer. I'm not going to point a finger at Steve Kerr. Like I said, this is a collaborative, terrible effort. But one thing he does not get a pass on is the idea of just the relationship with him and Jonathan Kuminga as it relates to him getting minutes, starting or otherwise. Last year, Jonathan Kuminga created this, whether it was him or one of his minions, and there was a lot of controversy that, you know, Jonathan, and he, to me, it was a solid point. He's like, why am I not playing more? Every time he got an opportunity, he was balling out. And they made a commitment to him, and voila, he responded by all those consecutive games of 20 or more points. And then somehow, some way, we get back into sort of that same on-again, off-again relationship between the head coach and the young potential star, Jonathan Kuminga, playing some games, playing well, sitting, starting, coming off the bench. And then it took Steph and Draymond sitting out again, this time against the Los Angeles Clippers, where you could clearly see Jonathan Kuminga said, and you could see it in his in his swagger. You can just literally see in his body language that he has this renewed confidence, knowing that those two guys are not on the floor and that he's the guy. And he was. He balled for 34 points, had double-digit rebounds, and now Steve Kerr is leaning into him again. Like,
yeah.
Okay, you're the guy. I'm the last guy in the room to criticize Steve Kerr. In fact, I hate going after coaches. It's such bottom feeding. But as it relates to Jonathan Kuminga, maybe at some point, and maybe do it right now, I don't know, maybe when his career is over with, he's going to say, yeah, I sort of mismanaged this kid. That if we're turning the corner and looking for a second score or looking to go young or whatever it is that the next chapter is, and you're clearly there, that giving this kid, Jonathan Kuminga, who has the potential and opportunity to either play through his mistakes or be the guy or show that he's worthy of a trade at the deadline or just simply show that he's worthy of getting that $35 million contract extension from the Warriors, whatever the case may be, he sure as hell should have been on the floor, and the commitment should have happened a lot sooner than this.
And it's not just, you know, like, you can't just not play him. Like, you have to pick a lane, commit to something, right? And Steve Kerr, for all the great he's done, obviously, the NBA championships and the way they've gone about things and what they've had to fight through on and off the court the last few years, you know, all that can be certainly in the mix, but simply, strictly on the court stuff with Kuminga, there's been this lack of commitment to him as a player. And in a year like this, and even last year to a certain degree, like, I get he's youthful and sometimes uncontrollable and needs to learn and kind of be reined in at times. That's fine. But I've always thought, how do you get better? Reps. More minutes you play, the more baskets you shoot, you just should be a better player. And there always seemed to be this reluctancy to commit to Kuminga, for whatever reason it may have been. But I think looking back, you can say, like, wow, kind of like you said, Dan, like, ugh, maybe we should have handled this better. And whether that was committing to him earlier, but, like, you walked into this year with no number two scorer. Obviously, you know, Melton gets hurt, and that obviously crushes what you were hoping to plan to do this year. But, like, you needed Kuminga. We were talking preseason. Kuminga has to be, you know, what he has to hit that level of potential to make this team go to places that they want to go to in regards to the playoffs. And even then, to begin the year, there really wasn't this commitment. And it's like, if you want to go anywhere, you got to trust this 22-year-old kid to help lead you there. He ain't have to be the one, but he has to be a two or three. And I don't know what, you know, held Kerr back from doing that stuff, but it's like, you shouldn't have taken this, Curry and Draymond being out, to now trust him. But now look at the record, 16-16, you're four games behind, and it's like, maybe had you committed to him last year or beginning of this year, maybe you're not 16-16. Maybe you're better than what you are now because of that stuff.
It's been sort of peculiar, the whole relationship with these two over the last couple of years. And I get it. I mean, I can see it with Jonathan Kuminga, that there's some immaturity, especially on the defensive end. And people don't like this when I go after him, because there's a lot of JK supporters out there, but he still does not have the same energy on that side of the floor. And he still doesn't get it in terms of rotations. But it's a process. He didn't have college with which to learn these things. Trayce Jackson-Davis was in college for 5 years. And you can clearly see the difference between the two. Trayce Jackson-Davis knows where to be on the floor, especially defensively. And Jonathan Kuminga, like in that pivotal game on Christmas Day with the whole world watching, is guarding Hachimura out of bounds, or Hachimura. And, you know, just has his back to the basket, and here comes Austin Reeves in a place where Jonathan Kuminga should have been, and that is closing that baseline and challenging the shot. He's, you know, he's nowhere to be found. He's chasing Hachimura. I don't know what they were doing. It wasn't even in bounds during the play. So there's that. But I think that at this juncture, I don't know that this is salvageable, Sterling. I don't. And I think it's one of those, let's just let him play. It's almost like, you know, if you're the Giants and you're not going to the playoffs and it's time for September call-ups, just let these guys play. Let them play
out
the season.
You don't believe the Warriors' season in itself is salvageable?
I think it's getting to that point. And even if it is, playing him is all part of that. Whether you're playing for the future because you're not going to the playoffs, or whether you're playing for this year and you want to make a run to the postseason, Jonathan Kuminga is going to have his hand in both of those equations.
Yeah.
So you know, the fact that it looked as though you made a commitment to him about a month ago when he was inserted into the starting lineup, and you sat Draymond Green, and it looked as though you're going to lean on Jonathan Kuminga, and then less than a week later, he's back on the bench, and then back in sort of this weird sort of land of you know, going between the two of starter and coming off the bench, not really knowing his minutes and knowing that he's one or two mistakes away from getting pulled. I think that there's just, I said this to Steining during the crossover, that there's got to be a commitment to him, but he's got to be aware of that commitment. Like, it's got to be to the point where he comes into a room with Steph Curry, and if Draymond needs to be there, that's fine as well. And they say in front of those guys, because I think he can get really deferential when they're on the floor, look it, you are going to be our number one option, or you're going to be 1A, but you now have the latitude to shoot the basketball. And unless you're really, really bad, I'm not going to pull you. And so I want you to hear that from me, and I wanted to say in front of Steph and in front of Draymond. So go out there and be that guy you were against the Los Angeles Clippers when these guys were out of the game and you came up with, oh, coincidentally, your career high of 34 points.
Well, and he's, what is he, 22? Like I said, Dan, you, like young people, whether they're in life or in the NBA, it means a lot to have your head coach say, look, we trust you, and we are going to believe that you can get this done. Especially when you have two Hall of Famers playing next to you, who that young player is like, look, I'll defer to them for either scoring or answers to questions that I have. Like, to have the confidence of the coaching staff behind you to believe in you, like that means something. It matters to a young player, like in Jonathan Kuminga's case, especially when it really has been kind of tumultuous of, well, they won't they. There's been some touting involved. There's been this noncommittal attitude to him. I think if they, like you said earlier in the crossover, sat Curry and Draymond and Kuminga down and said, look, whether you're the guy or you're the 1A or the 1B, whatever you are, we believe in you. You are going to be a foundational piece at least this year. And we have to have you. Thus, you are our big three in a way. You are going to be the three guys that carry this team forward. And Jonathan Kuminga, you're the number two scorer on this team. Like, you have to be involved. If you want to take 30 shots a game, we'd say no, but by all means, you had that freedom to do so if you're feeling hot that day. Whereas now, at least the last couple of years, it felt like he's been playing with the restraints on, and I want to see those taken off.
The other thing that we were talking about earlier is that if Steph is going to be relegated to a different role, if he's not going to be, well, he's still got to be your best option. Because who else is going to score from basketball? And he's still that guy. He just can't do it as consistently.
Yeah.
But here's where it gets difficult with Steph Curry. Because it's not like an aging Michael Jordan, or it's not like even an aging Kobe Bryant. Steph needs the basketball. And Steph needs to, in order to be effective, he's got to have the ball in his hands, and he's got to work his dribble. And he's got to look for the ISO, and he's got to look to see if there might be a crease for him to get to the rim, or he's got to see, depending on who he is, maybe on a switch, whether he can get to a step back and shoot his three. But the ball is in his hands. And so everything sort of stops when Steph is your number one. That's what happens when your number one is a point guard, which is somewhat rare in the NBA. And what happens to guys like Jonathan Kuminga, as well as the rest of the team, is things get really stagnant. And all of a sudden, there's no ball movement, and you become ball watchers, and you're waiting for Steph Curry to perform magic, as he has done on more than one occasion. And that's why he's one of one, and, you know, arguably one of the greatest, if not the greatest, to ever do it. I think if he somehow, when they were 12-3, and he took him to a championship this year, I think he gets vaulted into that conversation of potentially being right up there with Michael Jordan as the greatest to ever do it. But do you see my point is that it's challenging for the Warriors when your best player is so ball dominant and he's no longer the same guy. It encumbers the growth of the Jonathan Kumingas, of the younger players on this team, because they have got to wait for the ball to come their way, and or they've got to be deferential when he's on the floor to make sure that the ball's in his hand so that, you know, he's exhausted all options and can't get a shot off or can't get to the rim, and now I get the basketball. There's something's disharmonious with the way they're playing basketball right now, when your best player is aging and not the same guy but still wants the ball in his hands and to dribble as frequently as he does.
Does that mean maybe instead of in regards to signing his comments on signing Guru or in the crossover, oh, like this new role is a bench role or it's a reduced minutes role? Does that mean?
Yeah, you know what, Sinner? You know, as much as I just pontificated and howling at the moon, I don't know what the answer is because he's still your best player. But
right.
This is why I don't think there's any easy answers here. This is why
Does he then move to maybe being a spot-up shooter instead? You know, you can run all those things for him.
Yeah.
Like, is that role in a way kind of how Klay Thompson was in Golden State? He didn't need the basketball in his hands to make magic happen. Does he become more of a Klay Thompson for you while you have your younger players become more ball dominant and allow him to kind of work on the perimeter, hit those big threes and make magic happen? Maybe less or so, but to a more efficient extent.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Maybe he's your two, and he's coming off of pin downs, and he's a catch-and-shoot guy, or his role's a little bit different. You know, J.J. Redick, to his credit, when he – and I know LeBron is sort of the guy and has been – with AD, he's taken over the role once again as being sort of the alpha male. But early on, when the Lakers had success, J.J. Redick leaned in on Anthony Davis and said, Anthony Davis is now going to be our number one. And you're going to have more of a subordinate role. Like, you're not, the ball's not going to, the offense is no longer running through you, right? You're now 40 years of age, so you're still a significant player. There's no doubt about that. When you look at the Lakers, he can still do it. But it's Anthony Davis's team now. You didn't see that with Darvin Ham. But J.J. Redick did make that subtle change. So it can be done here. You can't, but the problem is that there is no number two to Steph Curry. And, but you can subtly change the role where you're no longer the guy. We still want you on the floor. We still want you shooting. But maybe, you know, you don't cross the timeline and just dribble looking for an opportunity to score at the expense of everybody else sort of standing around and waiting.
Well, and to your point right there, the Lakers have a player in Anthony Davis that they can claim to be the number one, that you are the number one scoring option on this team. This team runs through you offensively, whereas the Golden State Warriors don't. And so with that in mind, is that then Jonathan Kuminga? Is that what we're talking about in regards to committing? Or is that, hey, we got to find a guy that can be the number one. That way Steph feels more comfortable becoming the number two or playing an ancillary role to that said player. I don't know if there's anybody out there to do that. Like, they're not getting Giannis Antetokounmpo. He's not coming here. You're not getting Zion Williamson, who can never be healthy. You're not getting Brandon Ingram. Like, those guys aren't worthy. Or most of those guys aren't worthy of being the number one to Stephen Curry's two. So, like, you have to ask yourself, like, are you willing to bank the future on Kuminga becoming that? And, okay, if you do that, put every chip on the table and push it in to the center and say, here we go. But if you're not, like, you have to find that guy because that feels like maybe that is the one remaining path to victory if you want to get Steph that fifth NBA title.
I don't know what the answer is. But what I do know is that trading for a so-called free agent, it just so happens that these free agents, whether it's Butler or Paul George during the offseason, are guys in their mid-30s, is such a bad idea. Because you're more than just one player away. And so I think the best remedy for the Warriors is that you've got to just enter this phase of a rebuild. And we hate the word. Nobody wants to entertain that we're resetting or we're transitioning. Whatever it is that you want to call it, is that you now are entering a different phase of Warrior basketball. That the idea of being competitive for Western Conference finals or NBA championships are done. And I've maintained this, that the sooner you come to that recognition, the quicker you'll be back to relevancy. If you trade for Jimmy Butler, or if you had traded for a Paul George and you had to re-sign them or you inherit that contract for another 7 years at whatever the $40 to $45 million and you have the second apron now in place, you've just screwed yourself for the next decade. You do not want that ball and chain, especially when those guys are not going to bring you the title. And forget about the timeline with Steph Curry. So what it is that I think all of us need to recognize is that a transition should have been on the, you know, it should have been one of the options during the entire off season. Like, okay, let's go after this guy. Let's see if this works. But let's also consider getting out from underneath Klay Thompson's salary, getting out from underneath the contract for that of a Chris Paul, and let's save money, and then let's go in another direction and begin the rebuilding process. And yes, it sucks for Steph. We want to win him a title, but there are no other options at this point. And all you can do is hope that there's buy-in on the part of Steph, that he recognizes the special area that is San Francisco and the surrounding, you know, the Bay Area, and the fact that this is home, and the fact that if maybe, you know, a play-in game will suffice to keep him interested. But that's all we can do at this point. There is no escape hatch. There is no special pill, whether it's through a trade or in-house or Jonathan Kuminga, the current roster, that's going to get you back to the NBA Finals. This, to me, is the beginning of a transition and or the word everybody hates to hear, a rebuild.
If that's the case, then what are we looking forward towards next year? To me, there's some form or path where this year, 2024, 2025, becomes like a transition season for Golden State. And it doesn't mean transitioning into a rebuild. It just means that, okay, like, we've shed some salary here or there. Maybe you can find a way to get rid of Wiggins, and you decide if you're going to pay or not pay Kuminga, however that works. There's ways in which I believe whether you, contending for a finals championship, I don't think is in the cards for this team, but I do think there is a way to make yourself more competitive in the future. And I think that may be in order this year. Take a step back, you know, get rid of the contracts of Paul and, you know, get out of the Klay Thompson deal. And okay, you know, you have this weird kind of awkward, like, we're not very good, but we're like kind of competitive. We're 16-16. We're around 500. We're not playing our best basketball, but, you know, you get on a run and you see what happens. You know, milk this thing for what is left in it. But I do think next year, and I have no idea what the free agents are and what this team is going to do, but a 38-year-old Stephen Curry, I think, would be more welcoming of that new role if you then can make the move during the offseason. Now, I'm not saying go and getting an older Paul George, but I do think there are moves that can be made to not push this team towards the finals, but at least push this team to being a more serious contender in the Western Conference.
You know what that move's called?
What?
Getting in the lottery.
Rebuild? Okay.
I really mean it. I think that the best thing that could happen to this team, rather than playing some silly play-in game and get smoked again by Sacramento, whatever it is, just get in the Cooper Flagg sweepstakes. Doubtful you'll get them, but, and I don't know everybody that's coming out this year, but that's what needs to happen. You got to land somebody in the draft. That is a rebuild. I think that this idea that they're hanging on right now, to potentially, you know, getting up to you're a couple of wins away from getting back to this sixth or seventh seed. Yeah, that's true. But there's also the potential that this team could continue down this direction of losing and losing at a high clip. And if that's the case, then you're in the lottery. And if you get into the lottery and you land a player or two, and then you start thinking about who's available, now you have the semblance of a future. And I don't know how this whole Steph piece works into it. He's sort of this guy that's going to be there, and to your point, yes, to a relegated role. Draymond, you can do whatever you want with Draymond, but I think the Steph thing is always going to be there. But now I at least have a path out of this. You know, I have a foundation of getting a high draft pick or a lottery pick to go along with an emerging Kuminga, and hopefully there's some pieces here, whether it's Pajemski or Trace Jackson Davis continue to show some improvement, and maybe there's a free agent out there over the offseason that's younger, that makes sense. And now suddenly I'm beginning to piece together something with younger players. That's the key, is that this team has to be younger, and a future. Right now it's chaos. I don't know what the hell this is. From Lindy Waters to GP2 to a young Jonathan Kuminga to an old Draymond Green. I mean, we're all over the damn map.
It's directionless. It does feel like that the Warriors are caught in between. Whether you are the past couple of years, you're the St. Louis Cardinals, some aging veterans, and you're hoping to add some young guys in here, they don't work out, and you're like, look, we have a 38-year-old Paul Goldschmidt playing first base and a 35-year-old Sonny Gray pitching for us. He's our ace, and Lance Lynn's out there. You're like, oh, you know, maybe a wild card team, and it's like, no, like you're in the worst place you possibly can be, or you're the New Orleans Saints, and you're in cap hell, and you have Derek Carr playing quarterback and an older Alvin Kamara who you extended this year. Like, that's a place you don't want to be. You never want to be in the middle because you're either contending or you're building for a brighter future. And the Golden State Warriors are seemingly treading water in a Western Conference where the rest of the NBA is kind of passing them by. And so, again, maybe, like, I'm not even a Warrior fan, but for this franchise, like, the word rebuild sounds scary because you have the name Stephen Curry tied to you still and under contract. Gotcha. Like that right there is like, well, we still have Steph, and it's like, okay, yeah, you do, but if we're having an honest conversation about Stephen Curry, and I get there's been some injuries this year and whatnot, but he's playing his lowest minutes since 2020. He's averaging his lowest points since 2020. And that doesn't mean he can't come back up next year in a new role, but it's just being honest with where you're at. The toughest part about being a human being is assessing yourself and saying, hey, I need to improve in these areas. Self-growth is so hard to do as a person in life and as a franchise. Like, how can we figure this thing out? How do we assess this mess we're currently in? And I have a hard time believing this organization, for as great as they have been, is willing to admit, like, look, we maybe aren't and can't survive and contend seriously with Curry being the 1A. He can be on the team. Like, the whole thought of two timelines, we are the San Antonio Spurs 2.0, and it sounded great when you won with Jordan Poole and he was here and everything. But once Poole left, and then, like all that kind of came cratering down. Wiseman got moved, like, all of that fell down to back earth, and it was like, we don't know what we have here, but let's ride this thing out and see how it works. And last year it didn't work, and this year it's not currently working. And maybe that is like, hey, it's not gonna work the way it's currently constructed. Now, I don't know how to fix that. I don't know what tools have to be put in place to make this thing, you know, come together and have the puzzle be complete, but I think having an honest conversation with yourself, that being the Golden State Warriors, is needed. Of like, we need to seriously find, like, what is wrong and how we can kind of reshape this thing to get back to who we once were, or at least seriously, you know, contend in the Western Conference.
Out of the corner of my eye, we got Penn State in Boise State, and I'm just wondering, Penn State's taking it to them. I know Boise State had a big season, but how the hell did they get into this playoff against Penn State? It looks like they're playing an intramural team. Like, these
not only get in, they got a bye.
I know. Well, they've only lost once this year, right? That's ridiculous. Crazy. Looking at the athletes, comparing the two. It's just like, I mean, these guys.
It's Boise State. I will say this. I don't know what year it was, but Boise State might be my least favorite college because when Oklahoma played Boise State in the Totino's, whatever bowl it was back in the day, with Ian Anderson playing running back, they scored the game-winning touchdown via the Statue of Liberty.
Yep, baby.
And they proposed this to his girlfriend. I was like, would you propose to her had you lost that game? And my goodness, why couldn't you lose that game? Jared Zembronski, whatever your quarterback's name was then. It haunts me to this day. I was 5 years old then.
That was an awesome. God, that was good knowledge, man. That probably was the funnest bowl game I've seen in a long, long time. All right, let's get back out to the Warriors. Sam's hanging out in Oakland. Sam, what's going on, buddy? What do you say?
Oh, great show. I agree with you guys totally. How is Boise State even in this playoffs? It doesn't seem like a college football playoffs at all. but going back to Steph Curry and the draft, you know, and the Klay Thompson contract, it makes me think, what if we never signed Klay Thompson to that max deal? What if, and we had already had the number two pick, what if we had taken LaMelo Ball? What would have happened if we had a fresh point guard? That guy would be our point guard. Steph would be the off guard. We'd be doing beautiful right now. We'd be right there. It just makes no sense that, you know, the GM we had or the president didn't draft LaMelo and he signed Klay Thompson to that max deal. Those two decisions right there basically cost Steph at least six rings and God knows how many more. Because we could have put in a, we could have gotten a max player, for example, like a Damian Lillard with the LaMelo Ball. I mean, it's incredible. We had a number two pick in the lotto, and we didn't get nothing for it. We could have traded up like Mark Cuban and gotten Anthony Edwards, but we didn't do anything. We just sat there, picked the wrong person, and just it was pitiful, really pitiful. It seemed like the front office for the Warriors at that time was just had their heads in the sand, no idea what was going on, while the rest of the league was five steps ahead of them, and we had the best player on earth that we'll ever have in Steph Curry. Now, just like you said, he's 38. What are we going to do now? You guys have a great day. Best show on the radio. Bye.
Well, he's actually 36, but soon to be 37. Yeah, Sam, I hear you, and I'm with Sam. Although the Klay Thompson getting a max deal, you had to. Your hands were tied. You know, he suffers the injury against Toronto in the NBA Finals. What were you going to do? You're not.
And he helped you win one. When
Oh yeah, and he was still very good. He was still. Yeah. You know, I want to say that was Klay Thompson still in his late 20s. I mean, so he's still very much in his prime. But as far as missing on James Wiseman, is not something you can overlook. And I don't. You can go after Bob Myers, but that at the time I remember saying, I don't know, James Wiseman sounds good to me. I was in on James Wiseman. That's such an imperfect science when it comes to the draft. But to Sam's point, missing on Wiseman really is sort of not. It hasn't. There isn't a direct cause and effect as to why we're at right now. But it sure has got a lot to do with it. Because that was an opportunity. Because you were rebuilding then. Remember, Sterling, you still had Steph, Klay, Draymond. You had guys who were still in their prime. And then you had an opportunity to get into the lottery. And you're like, oh, this is setting up perfectly. When you talk about how Steph and Klay, especially Steph, is just going to walk off.
You're talking about being the Spurs with Kawhi. Like, this is the bridge. This is like the one piece we didn't have. Like, it's going to, you know, a piece in the paint, be the Bogut, you know, be the most spates, be the David Lee of this team. And what a massive whiff. Terrible.
Yeah, and I get it. I understand why they went after James Wiseman. It was so sexy because just what you said, like, not only if this guy hits, but hitting as a 7 foot, 1 inch guy who's got handle and can shoot, that's transformative. Like, I understand why Bob Myers pulled the trigger. But this is just sort of the world we live in, right? It's these draft picks, you never know. I mean, look at the NFL. You would think after all these years that when it comes to quarterbacks and when it comes to the college game, which now mirrors the NFL, they play so similarly, you know, that you would think that drafting a quarterback wouldn't be so difficult. It wouldn't be like splitting the atom. You could have a lot more security of who it is that you take number one. But every single year, teams miss. And it's just, that's all part of this. It's rushing roulette. Well, look at Caleb Williams. I mean, Caleb Williams, we'll see. But, I mean, Jaden Daniels... The Chicago Bears didn't even want to bring him in for an interview. They were so convinced that this was the guy.
Well, Drake Mays looked better than Caleb Williams at times this
year.
Like, worst team around him, completely worst team, but Drake Mays looks legit in New England.
I'm with you. Watch out.
It's a crapshoot. Like, honestly, it's a crapshoot. Like, you think you have the guy, and you don't have the guy, and Caleb can be great next year if he has a new head coach, a new offensive coordinator and everything, but, you know, back to the whole Wiseman conversation, like, The Warriors really did have three critical, I don't want to say mistakes, but like three critical like pieces in time, places in time. Klay's injury, whiffing on Wiseman, and then the punch. Like those three things completely altered this franchise's history. Now, what would they become? I have no idea, but you lost your number two scorer in Jordan Poole. You lost what you hope to be a really, you know, cornerstone piece in your front court with Wiseman, and then Klay comes back from the injury and really isn't the same, and you lost a couple years of Stephen Curry's prime. Like, all those things add up to, like, hey, Stephen Curry's 36 years old, going on 37. We have a really kind of young roster, at least a group of young players around him, but they really aren't ready just yet, and now Draymond's getting older, too, and You know, he really isn't giving you much anymore offensively, and it's like you kind of found yourself in this lost kind of vortex of like, we're here, we don't know where we're at, but we are here somehow, and we're trying to find our way through it.
By the way, Boise State just scored, so I'm all about the Broncos, man. Screw you guys. Go Boise State. They're down 14-7. Come on, Boise State. Yeah, look, I agree with you up until, I think you and I go through this every single time we're co-hosting a show.
Probably.
The Jordan Poole thing, I do not get. I don't understand. Now, look, the punch is a black eye, not metaphorically speaking, not literally. But I don't think it has anything to do with the franchise, and I don't think it has anything to do with Jordan Poole getting out of town. Now, I don't want to launch into, because I know knives are out. Right. People will come after me every time I go after Jordan Poole. I just don't think, and maybe you can explain to me or try and convince me that Jordan Poole getting, you know, knocked out had anything to do in terms of that team influencing to trade him prematurely. And I do understand he was your number two scorer. And I do get the fact that he helped you win an NBA championship. But I think that there were other extenuating circumstances with this young man that outweighed the punch as to why he got moved out of town.
Sure, and it's not to, you know, hammer home the point or linger on this old conversation, but, you know, the reason why I brought it up was simply because you had your number two scorer in place.
Got
and this
it,
team needs that. Like, this team needs a number two scorer, and whether the punch happened or not, we have no idea what Jordan Poole's career would have been, or, you know, maybe it's exactly the same as it is today, and you're like, okay, like, no harm, no foul. He's out of town, whatever. But, you know, this team needs a, like Steiny said, this team needs a 2 and a 3 to compete against teams like the Cavs and the Knicks and, you know, teams even like Memphis. Like, Memphis boat raced them a couple weeks ago, and you're like, whoa, like, what is this about? And so, for Golden State, again, you find yourself not one step behind, but almost two steps back from really being competitive in the Western Conference. And, you know, Curry will always have that effect. Curry will always be, you know, he'll bring his own gravitational pull, as Tim Roy always says. Like, he does all these things that are great. But, you, like, where he's at today makes you wonder, what would this team be able to do if they had a number two or number three scorer around him with that same gravitational pool of defenders that he brings to this offense?
By the way, you just mentioned Tim Roy. He had an opportunity to call a Warriors televised game. I don't know if you happen to see that. Yeah. So he did the game, and Kevin Dana, our friend Kevin Dana, was doing the play-by-play, as he's opted to do when Tim Roy takes some days off. I just have to say, it was one of the most pleasant televised games I've seen in a long time featuring the Golden State Warriors. I'll leave it at that. It was nice to hear another voice and just something that was pleasant to listen to. Not a lot of over-talking, just letting the action sort of develop. And it was just like driving down the highway and rolling down your window and getting a breath of fresh air. But shout out Tim
Roy.
Yeah,
Tim is the best on the air. He's the best off the air. Like, now I'm no longer living in the Bay. When the year started, kind of transitioning with Cam into his new role as Warriors network coordinator, I texted the Warriors and Tim Roy, and I was like, hey, like, I'm not going to be there, but, like, have a great year. And it was like, you know, you guys meant so much to me and everything. And, like, Tim's always the best. Like, he's always there. He always offers to help with stuff. Like, Tim, for as quirky as he might be for how bad his music taste may be, he's always the best.
Well, he's the best now, but I remember you mid-season, and don't go anywhere near my man Sterling Bennett, because you could be a little prickly. Those dudes had you running ragged. And I tell you what, Cam Williams,
a lot of work, but they're still the best.
Another year of this, and Cam Williams will be right up there in Asperia with you as your roommate. He's going to want to get the hell out of here. They work,
well, one
you guys
more parking ticket, and he might be up here.
Cam, do you want to retell the story before we get to the break? Cam Williams, ladies and gentlemen, was doing a show, and he was the only producer, but he literally had to run out of the booth because his car was getting towed down Kearney Street as he chased it to the yard. What happened? Take me through this.
Yeah, so originally I went down there just to go get my water. I left my water in the car during the break. I decided, I'm like, okay, I have enough time to run back up. So I go down there. I look to see where my car would have been, and I see all these cones and this working crew there. I'm like, where's my car? And a few other cars were gone. And then I look down the street and I see my car on the tow rig. So I ran up to the tow rig. I'm like, hey, it's free today, right? It's free. It's Sunday. And he was saying like, yeah, yeah, just go over there, talk to the PG&E gentleman and they'll let you know. And I'm just looking for a new spot to park your car. So there was a spot that they were moving the car to. Next thing I knew, I come back up here. Evan's in the studio and I let them know what happened. But then once the show ends, I go back down there. The car's nowhere to be found. So then the PG&E, the next set of PG&E workers that were there, they were like, yeah, you'd have to go down to the lot. They sent it down to the lot. And I'm thinking to myself, I thought they were just parking it, moving it to a whole new spot. But luckily, they weren't going to charge me. I called the tow place. They said there was no charge because it was a work, it was a city working situation. So they just had to move cars out just to fix something.
So they took his car and they towed it to the yard. After telling him they were just going to move it down the block. That is something. You know, in the closing moments, I want to talk about the Warriors. Any of your thoughts? You want to get into the 49ers. We're here for you as well. But I also, if you have any towing stories, any any cars getting, if you're rigged, if your rig was towed and you have a story, and or your best New Year's or your worst New Year's, I got one of those for you. We'll go around the room. As we conclude the show, Happy New Year's to everybody. Your stories of your best New Year's or New Year's story and or your car getting towed. Either one. That's all straight ahead here as we wrap up 2024 next on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
Sorry about my dog. Hey, cut it out.
I don't know if we've met your dog yet, Steve.
Sounds like she's a stretch four. Got some size to her in that bark.
More of a backup point guard.
On 95.7 The Game.
Sterling Bennett and Dan Avone. I guess we got this for the last time in 2024 in terms of sports talk radio.
It's true, we do.
Sterling, any New Year's resolutions? Any New Year's stories? Any New Year's sort of happenings you want to pass along?
It's New Year's resolutions, getting back to the gym, married life, and having a wife that likes to bake all the goodies and treats has not served me well in regards to my shape and form yet, looking more like a round ball than how I used to look before I moved out to witness protection. But other than that,
bro, get back to the way you were in high school. I want that dude at 325. Just embrace it, man. That could be a whole new stick for you.
I can play left tackle for San Francisco next week if I need to, if I was 325 pounds. In regards to like a New Year's story, I guess, I was going up north for the holidays for a short period of time this year, and I happened to get my second speeding ticket on my record. Got popped in Bakersfield going 80 in a 65, and I don't know about you, Dan. 80 didn't seem too fast to me, but the police and the CHP were not too happy with me when they pulled me over.
Were you I-5?
Yes, yes.
Okay, I thought the speed limit on I-5 was 70. Did it go back up to... Okay, go ahead.
I don't know. Either way, they were... You know, sirens blurred, and I was like, me? Coming after me? And they were like, yep. And I was like, all right. But I'm expecting about $500 ticket in the mail in the next few days. So, great.
Yeah, that's the worst. I've stopped with my moving violations, man. I don't even like driving anymore. That's the beauty of spending time in New York. It's the biggest stress relief. Put me in the subway. I see more characters. I'm more entertained in the subway. However, if you want to get someplace in a hurry, don't go on the subway because those trains, you can never understand what it is that they're saying over the PA. If there's a delayed an hour and a half, it's delayed an hour and a half. It's all you can hear. It's all you can make out. It's delayed an hour and a half. But, all right, big chick, you got a... Well, actually, I'll give you one.
Yeah, I got an I-5 story for sure.
Oh, let's go I-5. Let's go
I-5. I got a speeding ticket on I-5 maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and he clocked me at 111 in a 70, which I thought, and I asked him, of course, what did you write me down as? And he said 111, and I had to go to court in the Central Valley, hire a lawyer, the full nine. It was like a $1,600 speeding ticket.
What, were you going 111?
Say it again.
How fast were you going?
I guess I was going 111, but I was going with the speed of traffic. I wasn't like blowing by people at all by any means. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's the issue. When they change that thing to 70 miles an hour, it's like it's the Autobahn, man. Let's get going. So I was at a This is years ago when I used to go out. I don't go out for New Year's anymore. I leave it to you guys. You go hard, man. Big Chick, you going out tonight?
Probably, yeah, Dan.
Okay. Yeah, there you go. Cam, what are your plans tonight? Cam, I know you got to be in Amazon at 4 o'clock in the morning, so I know you're not going.
I'm getting his car back from the lot, apparently, Phil.
Well, no, I'm staying inside the house this time, making sure I'm not going out. The last time, speaking of cars, when I was at SF State, we were graduating, and we did our radio show on campus. We were all drinking, turning up in the studio, and there was an after party after one of the awards ceremonies. So I parked my car in a location that I usually park it in one of the neighborhoods, and I go get my car later. I notice that there's this glass shattered all on the ground. And I'm thinking, oh, no, my car got stolen. So I'm freaking out. And I didn't even want to go to the party. I called the cops. They went to go look for it. But then I went to the party. And then they called me like, hey, we found your car. So my car was in the area, but it was parked in another spot that I don't really park in. So basically I got too messed up and I didn't realize my car was actually in the area. So it's like I always have these car situations going on with me.
Or we could
stop driving.
Yeah.
This can bleed into the most inebriated either three of, well, I know Sterling you don't drink, but we can always go down that road. It sort of ties into New Year's, but so here's a New Year's story. This is pretty mild. I'll keep this PG. But are you guys familiar with the Triangle? Oh, you Big Chick, you must know the Triangle in San Francisco, the Balboa Cafe, and then there used to be the Golden Gate Grill. And I don't know, they always change. The Balboa Cafe, which is on Fillmore and
Greenwich.
And Greenwich, thank you very much. Fillmore and Greenwich, apparently somebody has been there more than once, that being Big Chick. So the Triangle, there's these three bars, right? They're institutions here. The Balboa Cafe has been there forever. It's an icon. The other two change hands because for whatever reason. And I remember I was just, I don't know, maybe I was back home for college, just out of college. And so we were going hard down to the Balboa and early. You got to get down to the Balboa Cafe at like 8 o'clock if you want a seat at the bar. And you just sit there and drink all night and ring in the new year. So we were down there early. But before we went to the Balboa, we went over to the Golden Gate Grill. And one of our other friends, who was sort of a one of those guys that you knew in high school that was always sort of mischievous, always getting in trouble, but a good dude, came from a good background. His name was Jimmy. And always sort of, you know, a guy that was in and out of work, but just a good dude. And so we go to the Golden Gate Grill. There's like seven strong of us. And lo and behold, guess who's bouncing? It's Jimmy. Like, Jimmy, look at you, suit and tie, bouncing on New Year's Eve. Man, you've turned your life around. And he used to be one of the biggest screw-ups. He'd go harder than any of us. And he's like, yeah, you guys need to keep it down, right? This is. I love you guys, too, but I don't want to have to throw you out of here. We're like, come on, Jimmy, what are you doing, man? All of a sudden, you grew up overnight. And we're like, whatever. Hey, Jimmy. We're all hitting him on the shoulder. We go in. We go to the Golden Gate Grill. We have a few. We go back. We're like, all right, Jimmy, man. Happy New Year, brother. He's like, yeah, keep it clean, guys. Keep it clean. And we get to the Balboa Cafe, and we're all saying, God, you can believe Jimmy's growing up on us? The guy's a bouncer now? He used to be a degenerate worse than us. We're at the Balboa Cafe. Now it's getting to about 10:30. It's getting late. And we're six, seven drinks in. And all of a sudden, the Balboa Cafe doors open. And the next thing I know, Jimmy, as I'm sitting at the bar, he's got his arms around us, and he's like, fellas, let's go. And we're like, Jimmy, what are you doing? What, are you on a break? He's like, you're bouncing across the street. He's like, no, I got fired an hour ago. Let's go. Jimmy had returned to being Jimmy by the end of the night as we rang in, whatever, I don't know, 1995. But
that's funny.
We hope all of you have a we still got 5 minutes left in the show, so we got to somehow wrap this up. Do you want to wrap it up on a New Year's resolution for a local team? How about that?
And we certainly can. Why don't you start, Dan? What is your New Year's resolution for the Golden State Warriors?
Oh, I was going to go San Francisco Giants because I don't get enough play. Can I go Giants?
Oh, you can go. We can do all three. We're already here. We got to fill 5 minutes.
The New Year's resolution for the San Francisco Giants is that the San Francisco Giants, their New Year's resolution is to get somebody who can hit 30 bombs, and that's Willy Adames. I'm tired of this. Nobody since Barry Bonds has hit 30 damn home runs. So I'm going to leave that as my resolution. Big Chick, you going?
Yeah, it's for the 49ers to get healthy.
Okay.
It's very simple.
Resolutions there, Cam? It could be Cam used as an... These don't have to be relegated to sports, so whatever you got.
Well, I'll keep it sports anyway, but I'd say the Niners need to beef up the line on both sides.
Yeah, that's a good one. The offensive and defensive. Which one would you say is more of a concern, Sterling, offense or defense?
That's tough. I think I'd say offense. I think you want to talk about this day and age in the NFL, you have a really good offense, you can usually go to the playoffs compared to having a really great defense. Maybe defense will help you win here or there. I think San Francisco's defense this year was good enough to win them a handful of games. They ended up losing because the offense couldn't answer the call. You fix left guard, you fix center, you fix right tackle, two of those three, and you get Trent Williams back healthy with Dominic Pooney, who was phenomenal this year. This offense will get back to running the football. You protect Brock Purdy or Sam Darnold in Dan's case, and you're going to have a lot of success next year if they can do that.
Oh, is that your resolution?
It's not, but it kind of goes into yours. You didn't get Corbin Burns for the Giants.
Yeah.
Go out and give me some Roki Sasaki, and let's have some Japanese domination in the Bay Area for the first time in forever.
So do you want to know a little truth here? So this afternoon, I thought that I was not doing a show today because Lucas had texted me and said, as I looked at it again, are you available New Year's Day?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was New Year's Eve day. Usually, so you guys correct me here. What are the semantics? So Lucas texted me and said, would you be able to do a show New Year's Eve day? To me, there's one or the other. It's either New Year's Eve or it's New Year's Day.
Yeah.
So he said New Year's Eve day. Which, for some reason in my head, I just said, oh, I got to work New Year's Eve. I'm going to, you know, I had to think about what it is I'm doing. And I said, yeah, okay, New Year's Day will work, thinking that I was working New Year's Day. So I didn't think I was working today. And speaking of sushi and beers.
He's pounding hard ones.
Well, I hadn't got into pounding, but I was literally with four friends, and we were sitting there with a plate of sushi. So my sister-in-law had made this amazing... So, first of all, a friend of mine's a fisherman. He's not a fisherman by trade, but he fishes on the weekend. He's a serious fisherman. And he had all of this ahi. He had yellowtail. He had bluefin. He had salmon. And so he gave me these extras. And so my sister-in-law put together this amazing sushi platter that I took down to the club. And I swim with these three other guys. I said, hey, listen, man, we got some beers and sushi. And they were bringing some other stuff. And so... I'm sitting down. It's a nice day today. I don't know if you noticed. I don't know about hysteria. Wisteria. Isn't that where the...
Desperate Housewives lived?
Is that where you live?
Hysteria.
Okay. So anyways, I'm sitting there, and I've got like... I got cold beers looking at me, this plate of sushi, and then I looked at my texting. Oh, no. It was Nahagian text me and said, hey, I got this great sound from today, and this is at like 12:45, and I'm like... Wait a minute, for today,
what are you talking about?
Hey, what's going on here? And then I immediately called Lucas and I said, hey, bro, when am I working? And he's like, hey, you're working today. I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. I was like, I had one cold one and I'm looking at this plate of food. I got five good buddies and I had to hightail it out of there. And here I am, man.
Did you at least
regaling stories about Jimmy Arata from New Year's back in the day? No, I didn't. I was like, yeah, I made it somehow, some way. All right, just like we made it to the end of the show. Sterling, my man, it's been – what are they going to do against the Cardinals? 49ers win or lose that game, or do you even give a rip?
Do I care? No, but I have to host overtime, so I think they'll win. We'll see what happens.
By the way, way to kick ass in overtime. I enjoy your passion and listen to you. Seriously, when I'm driving around, I tune in to listen to you, and I always love you during the draft because you study this stuff, and you called out Isaac Grundy way before any of us knew who the hell he was. Big Chick, I love you. Cam, my man, Happy New Year's to all of you. Be safe tonight, and we, of course, will see you in 2025. Good night, everybody.